everybody, and welcome back to No Downtime. It's your podcast from Fort Rock Data Center, located in beautiful Central Oregon. Connor and Levi are here today, back at you, to talk Fort Rock and the data center world. So, in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about what it takes to plan for the worst day. This is the day that everyone hopes will never happen, and that's when a disaster hits. So, you know, whether it's a cybersecurity attack that exposes private customer data, or maybe a weather event that takes out power for multiple days or weeks, or even a cut fiber line that disrupts network traffic, being prepared can make or break a business. So, Levi, before we kind of dive into it, let's do a little bit of a check-in. What's new at the data center in general, or have you had any interesting conversations with clients lately about challenges they're facing, anything like that? What's new?
Oh, well, I was just there last Friday, and you started talking about disasters and bad things that could happen, and I was thinking, oh, today's Tuesday. Monday was yesterday, So, no. I mean,
you can have a case of the Mondays on Tuesday as well.
Yes. Right. Now, in terms of the data center, you know, data center world, what's going on in our nook of the cranny, right, our area versus the rest, I saw an article. The Pew Research Center recently put out some information. I read through it, and of course I had to go look at the source of, you know, all their stats and stuff like that, just to geek out a little bit. It was claiming that there's, in the U.S., this is just USA alone focused, right? There's going to be more than 3,000 operational data centers, and it's growing, of course. That number has gone up from when they did their initial research. So, and that's in the next few years. So more than 3,000 data centers nationwide, that's a pretty steep number, because right now about half of those are in various stages of development. So whether, you know, being commissioned and turned up or just, you know, breaking ground, 1,500 data centers, that's like nothing to, I don't know, what's the term, shake a stick or something?
I don't know that one.
Wega something. There's some kind of saying that you could put in that spot right there that would make sense.
Insert euphemism here.
There you go. Yeah, right. But as I was reading through the article, the research too, about two-thirds, I mean, it was like smack dab right at 67%, are slated to be built in rural areas. Not urban, like traditional data centers, but rural. And if you look at where all the data centers are populated today, 87% are in urban areas, so, you know, major metropolitan areas. So that's a huge shift of, rather than looking to where the grid already provides power and water, and I think with, you know, rural fiber being readily available, and then also you look at the cost of land and surplus power in some of those areas that is not being used, you know, it makes sense to build there. So I thought it was kind of interesting, because there was something in there that said like nearly 40% of counties that are introducing a data center currently do not have a data center. And that's, you know, 40%, that's pushing nearly half. So that's a lot of green field, you know, a lot of green area, right?
Right.
So obviously there's going to be some controversy on that, because Farmer Joe is going to have a data center next door. So, you know, don't let the cows out.
Sure. Seen, you know, stories about, you know, people are voicing their opinions about this a lot. And I saw one story, I think, from a, you know, a local family who refused a pretty large amount to sell their land for the data center. It was like $26 million or something they were offered, and they refused basically to keep this, you know, family farmland in their family. Wow. So, yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, building out in rural areas as opposed to like Fort Rock, which is pretty square in the middle of Bend for the most part. Yeah. But, you know, like you said, rural fiber lines are becoming more and more accessible, and a lot of rural ISPs out there, and just different fiber paths are all over rural America right now. So that makes sense, and, you know, definitely something to look at.
But you think about what's driving this, though, right? And you hear the buzzword. I'm not going to say it, because I don't want to put $5 or a dollar in the jar. So
he's got the button ready.
Anyway, yeah. But I was reading a different article. Yeah, I read a few. And this one was, there was like, I want to say it was CoBank, has a lead economist that spoke at like a NTCA, you know, it was like a rural broadband type of conference a couple months ago. I think it was in San Antonio, I forget. But anyways, he said that, you know, COVID was leading the push to implement the phrase I'm not going to say, because I'm cheap, which arguably... right? Okay, I'll just say it, AI. All right, there you go. Anyways, which has led to more in-person communication and also a shift in how we transmit data. And so initially, people thought that, you know, the experts thought that was going to shrink back down after COVID kind of blew over. Mm-hmm. But it's continued to grow. And so now the predictions are that the COVID era use, which was, you know, at its peak of, you know, Zoom calls and meetings and things like that, anyways, it's going to triple within the next couple of years. And I think that like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft are at the driver's seat of that bus, you know, kind of taking us that way. So I've been thinking it's like a bubble waiting to pop. And that's why there's 1,500 data centers currently being developed. Sure. And another 1,500 on their way. So it's just crazy thinking that there's so much development, so much, you know, demand for data centers. It's just kind of crazy.
Right.
So, but you know, Oregon, you know, you think of Oregon as kind of like, I don't know. I used to think of Oregon as kind of podunk. Grew up here. It's in the Northwest. People are like, Oregon.
Oh yeah.
You guys got mountains, right? I'm like, yeah, we have mountain and coast and high desert and
a little bit of everything.
Oh, you're the first person I've met from Oregon. Anyway. But, you know, Virginia, Texas, right?
Yeah.
They're well known for having like hundreds of data centers. California too, right? And then you have, you know, I don't know, Georgia, Ohio, kind of trailing after that, New York. And then there's Oregon, bam, right in the middle. We beat out Washington, Pennsylvania, Florida, Iowa, Indiana, et cetera, which is kind of crazy. We have 142 data centers in Oregon, where 115 of those are currently operating and 27 are under development right now. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of like right in the middle. And I think a lot of that growth that's happening in Oregon, like if you look at Florida, Florida is known for having data centers. Florida only has 8 in the whole state right now that are being built versus Oregon has, I think, 27 that are in various planning and construction stages. So, yeah, I mean, our cheap, I shouldn't say too cheap, but our fairly cheap power has been driving that, and then abundance of water as well,
right,
in the Northwest. So,
well, and I know there's, you know, rightfully so, a lot of concern about resource usage when it comes to these new data centers.
Yep.
We've talked a lot about on this show, you know, Fort Rock's purpose-built facility that takes advantage of the local environment. We've got cool, cold nights. Yep. It's easier to cool. The summers are very mild over there, even. Yep. Lots of renewable hydroelectricity.
Lots of sun.
Yeah. And, you know, plus, of course, it's built on that stable foundation that's out of the FEMA 500-year floodplain and those different things. So, yep. I mean, you know, when you're thinking about these data center developments, and super hot-button topic right now, of course, but at least for me, it makes me feel, I don't know, makes me on a personal level feel good about what Fort Rock is doing and is not necessarily just being built and hyperscaling to make room for all these AI companies.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said it.
It's still run by local people. And if, like you said in our last episode, if you need something, you can literally just pick up the phone and talk to you and make it happen. So
yeah,
I think that's kind of what sets Fort Rock apart, at least. But I'm a little biased.
I mean, connectivity-wise, we're kind of positioned well. You know, 13 different carriers and connectivity options. We host the Central Oregon Internet Exchange there, so... But you look at, you know, low latency direct fiber connections to some of the big players in Washington State and in California. Oregon's right there in the middle. So it makes sense to have kind of a hub. And again, you know, in terms of economies of scale and looking at operational costs and the rest of that, we're not a huge data center. We're a small niche data center. But again, positioned and planned for in terms of disaster recovery and business continuity. So... That's, I think, really what kind of drove us into existence is, you know, being, from an environmental standpoint, just a great location to have a data center.
Wow, what an amazing transition. Well, let's dive a little bit into that a little more, disaster recovery, business continuity. So what are we actually talking about here? What are we protecting against? Because, you know, a disaster might not just be, you know, an earthquake or a wildfire or you know, like you said in our little pre-show, it might be Godzilla coming up out of the ocean and causing chaos.
Hey, but you know, there's people that believe the Earth is flat. There are people that believe in aliens. Why not, you know, Godzilla?
So let's just, what are we talking about here? If something crazy were to happen, you know, what are we protecting against, and how does a facility like Fort Rock help with that?
Well, let's throw a wet blanket onto this real quick and make it real dark. We see what's going on with Iran right now in the world stage. And, you know, a lot of their neighbors did not think that they were going to be targeted, you know, that they were in tight with Iran. And then Iran's like, you know, blowing up their oil refineries and wells and infrastructure. So, you know, there's all kinds of real world disruptors that exist, some that are man-made and some that are, you know, nature-made. So there's, you know, power failures, and you could go either way with those. But there's, you know, of course, cyber attacks, ransomware, human error, hardware failure, network outages, which can occur. But bottom line is, if you're not planning for that worst day, you're not planning at all, really. Mm-hmm. So you should have a plan in place for your organization that revolves around business continuity, and ask yourself, if something were to happen, you know, put it fill in the blank, whether it's a building fire or an earthquake or a tornado or fill in the blank, a flood, a burst pipe even, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen that happen, you know, local buildings and such. Who's going to keep things running, and what kind of backup do you have? If you're going to recover from that disaster, how are you going to restore things after things go wrong, and how long is it going to take you to get things restored mm-hmm. back to original operations? So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. And I just want to set the stage a little bit to kind of highlight why this is so important, why it's so important to think about your disaster recovery plan and putting in a plan to get back online if things go wrong. So here's a couple stats for you. So 93% of companies that experienced prolonged data loss that's lasting 10 or more days mm-hmm. have gone bankrupt within the following year. And this is according to 2025 data from Invenio IT.
Okay.
So we talked about this a little bit back where, you know, if you've got 10 or more days of prolonged data loss, whatever it's from, there's the data shows that a good overwhelming majority of those companies will file for bankruptcy. So, you know, prolonged data loss is devastating. Mm-hmm. Another stat for you, according to a 2024 IBM report, the average cost of a data breach is around $5 million.
Oh, it's chump change. Come on.
For some, it might be, but
no,
you know,
I'm just kidding.
Horrible. And I mean, a lot of our clients, you know, that's no small number there. So
no.
And just kind of one more stat here for you. This is according to a survey of small to medium sized businesses by Norton, around 40% of companies lose critical data in a cyber attack. So definitely important to keep in mind the, I guess, real world consequences of, you know, going offline and losing data and being victim to a disaster. Very important to have a plan in place. So let's kind of talk about that a little bit, what it takes to develop, test, and kind of put that plan in place. What does it take to make this happen? Where does Fort Rock come in? What can we offer?
Well, you know, there's some of the larger organizations, they'll have a whole team dedicated to disaster mm-hmm. recovery, business continuity. And, you know, they have ties into compliance and they have ties into, you know, different departments, IT, et cetera. But when it comes to the majority of the organizations out there, you know, businesses that are operating, a lot of them do not have a dedicated team, much less a plan in place. So I've seen where there's often a lack of ownership, you know, at least clear ownership, right? When it comes to who to reach out to during an incident. And then, of course, assuming that cloud alone equals solid disaster recovery is another assumption of like, well, we're in the cloud. Well, your cloud just got attacked and brought down
right.
airlines. What are you going to do? There's situations where often there's a common theme of underestimating how long the recovery is going to take and underestimating what kind of systems or programs are in place or policies, procedures, et cetera, that are in common use that are actually critical to operations. A lot of times they look at a few core systems like ERP, but then they forget about communications, you know, their UCAS, like their phone systems, or their email. You know, you just go down the long list of what do you touch in a day? What do you touch within a week? And if one of those things just magically disappeared one day, what would you do? How would you function? So putting a plan into place as of, you know, contingency plan, XYZ product or service is offline, it's not available, what are we going to do instead? And then, of course, the other contingency is here's an alternative, or here's how we can get back up online as quickly as possible. So part of it is knowing your on-premise systems, knowing where those single points of failure exist, mm-hmm. but then also understanding who is going to be, you know, the main contact for each one of those systems, who their backup is, and then what steps need to be taken in order to mitigate those issues. So that's something that, you know, you can put into place, but then sometimes people put it into place and then they never test it.
Right.
So that's another thing too, is thinking about it. If you do have a plan, are you sure it's going to work? Have you tested it?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Are the right people still involved? You know, all that, that sort of thing. So I guess, you know, part of that disaster recovery plan is you're thinking about, you mentioned it a little bit, is how long is it going to take you to recover and how much are you really able to recover? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the disaster recovery world, that's your recovery point objective, your RPO, and then you've got your recovery time objective, your RTO. Mm-hmm. Can you, you know, kind of talk a little bit about these terms and why they matter so much?
Yeah, yeah. So the recovery point objectives, that would be kind of revolving around the data that you have and what you could afford to lose or not lose, you know, what's critical. Mm-hmm. And so identifying, again, those systems and what information is necessary to operate. So if you have a point of, let's say you're a small pizzeria and you have a point of sale system, everything revolves around the pizzeria ordering system. Do you have, you know, employees trained to where if the system's down, they could write up tickets by hand? If the system's down, is there a way of processing cards? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, again, as I watch people purchase lunch and dinner, I'd say 90-something percent are using a card these days. So,
right.
Again, do you have those systems in place? Those are some of the questions you should ask. And then the other thing, too, is how long can you be down before you just say, okay, we got to shut it down? We're spending more in labor, twiddling our thumbs than we are in actually operating, you know, can't make any sales, can't get anything done. So again, that's your RTO, right? Your recovery time objectives. Essentially, how long can you afford to be down?
Yeah.
Is the question you need to ask. So, and different businesses will have different tolerances, right? You have manufacturing that may have, you know, a project worked into a 2-week timeline. If they lose a couple days, they can hitch back mm-hmm. up. But you may have, you know, real time, well, let's say an accounting firm, right? April 10th through the 15th are probably the worst times you could go down and have issues.
No,
so that may sink you for an entire season if you lose a couple weeks of operational time right at the peak of your season. So your business continuity and your disaster recovery plans should start with, when would your business be the most impacted? How does technology play into that? And then what kind of alternatives can you put into place in order to continue operating?
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about this a bit, but, you know, why is geographic separation, geographic diversity so important for a real disaster recovery plan?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll give you a couple examples. So 2020 was a doozy of a year. I don't know if you have any nightmares ingrained in your brain.
Seared into my mind. Yeah.
Here in the Northwest, it was exceptionally strange, not just because of the obvious, you know, worldwide event that occurred, but we had an abnormal amount of wildfires that kicked off, and a lot of those were in areas that had not seen wildfires in a very, like, not in my lifetime. And so my home, as using that as an example, we were evacuated, and for 2 weeks we were not allowed to be on the property while they're, you know, mitigating the fire issues. So there were businesses that, you know, operate in different areas that were shut down. People had to relocate. It was a massive upheaval of life as you know it. And then that same year we had an ice storm. We lost power during the ice storm. I had 13 trees on my property that came down, and our, you know, driveway was blocked. Spent half a day just cutting up logs to be able to get to the street. But we were without a power for 15 days straight.
Mm-hmm.
So PGE, which is our, you know, power provider, took 15 days to restore power. And there were plenty of areas that were out even longer than us. So, you know, you think about, you know, just at your home, if you don't have internet, you don't have lights and heat and that, wait a minute here, now my freezer and my fridge aren't running, you know, do you have a generator? Do you have enough fuel to run it for a while? And then do you have a way of going and getting more fuel, mm-hmm. you know, when you start running low on fuel? So there's different things that, you know, from a home perspective, you can kind of plan, you know, make sure you keep some water jugs on hand so you have drinking water in case something were to happen, right? You know, you can go to FEMA and a bunch of other websites, and they'll walk you through some of the things that you can do to prep. I use that with my fingers as quotations right. there, right? But think about your premise at your, you know, your physical locations and your virtual workers and the rest of that. Like, as an organization, do you have a purpose-built facility that's designed around resiliency? Because if you don't, that's why we were built around resiliency, mm-hmm. right? If you think about a regional snowstorm and ice storm, you know, that takes out, you know, Vancouver, Portland, and part of Salem, in terms of just kind of, and I don't know what that is, if it's like, you know, 500 square miles of area that's just at a standstill for a few days while everybody's out of power and nobody can, unless you have ice skates, right, you could probably hit the road, but no motor vehicles were doing too well during that time on a couple inches of solid ice. So, you know, having a geographically diverse data center for all of your backups makes sense, because if you do have a regional issue, you know, some kind of natural disaster, you have a safe location that's not affected. In addition to that, the data center itself being, you know, besides being on the east side of the Cascade Mountain Range and sitting on, you know, 4,000 feet of basalt and granite, we have redundant power. So totally redundant, separate, segregated power entrances and power equipment. So we have literally an A side and a B side, as if it was two separate buildings. Mm-hmm. We have redundant cooling, battery backup, automatic transfer switches for power, that switch between battery backup, generators, and commercial power. We have on-site water tank, so we can run around a week without municipal water source, without needing to recycle water. But being in a geographically diverse location definitely has its advantages. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be too far away. Like, if you had a data center in Hawaii, arguably that probably wouldn't be the best, just because of distance and latency and right. the limited connectivity options there. But if you're located in Texas, get a data center either on the East Coast or the West Coast. Mm-hmm. If you're located in California, you know, get a data center located up in Oregon or Washington. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to be geographically diverse. Or even if you're in the I-5 corridor between Seattle and LA, get on the east side of the Cascade Mountain Range. Right. You know, it's a few hour drive, well, 3 hours. The benefits of being geographically diverse are definitely worth it. So,
yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, cybersecurity and how the data center kind of handles this, where, you know, cyber attacks are among the leading cause of downtime. You know, you got constant phishing scams that are always evolving and just different ways for scammers to gain access to networks and organizations and whatnot. So, you know, what role does immutable backups in cybersecurity from Fort Rock's point of view kind of come into play there?
Well, there's, like, when it comes to small businesses, mid-side, yeah, I mean, even governmental agencies, they're more prone to ransomware and malware attacks now than they ever have been before. Mm-hmm. Having immutable backups, that means like a full, complete backup that you can restore to that particular date and time. Think about data entry. If you're going through and balancing your checkbook, or you're going through and entering a bunch of invoices, if you lost a day of work, that's 8 hours of work that you have to put in back into restoring that data, right? And then times however many employees you have. That can get really costly really mm-hmm. fast. So having regular backups to protect against those malware, you know, insider threats, accidental. Yeah, there's sometimes people hit the oops button, you know, and they accidentally delete or wipe something. And if you don't have your data backed up, you could be in a world of hurt. So mm-hmm. disaster recovery is just as much about looking at cyber attacks as it is a physical natural disaster, a man-made situation, you know, or even a Godzilla imaginary event, right?
Right.
But you have, you know, virtual events and you have physical events, and you should be, you know, really planning for the worst when it comes to both areas, and have multiple backups, multiple locations, all done at the same time, so you have multiple options if one of your, you know, physical sites were to take it, or, you know, if one of your systems were to take a nosedive. By having an isolated backup that's not recordable after it's been done, at least gives you something to roll back to.
Most definitely. Fantastic. Well, you know, I think that's going to kind of cover it for us today. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you like this episode and you're listening on our website, you can also find it on a couple of other platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts now, Podbean, Pocket Casts, and of course, we have the Fort Rock YouTube channel where you can listen on there as well. So with that said, for Levi Mansell, I'm Connor Williams, and we'll catch you next time here on No Downtime.
Thanks, Connor.
Fort Rock Data Center is a purpose-built facility strategically located in the high desert of Bend in Central Oregon. We offer reliable business continuity and edge computing solutions that meet SOC 2 Type 1 compliance in a low-risk environment east of the Cascade Mountain Range. Learn more at fortrockdc.com. Background music by Maxim Malko from Pixabay.
What if Godzilla were to attack Portland? What would happen? You know, like, we don't have the giant moth or, you know, Team America or anybody that could,
it's a very real possibility,
take on Godzilla.